Coming up, you want the Moto X, but you can't afford it? We'll take a look at the Moto G, some brand new speakers that don't look like rocks, and a pot that charges your smartphone. Plus, Paul Thurrott's here with his review of the brand new Surface Pro 3. It's time to watch before you buy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Ding, 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 ding. Before You Buy on the air, this is the show where we get the greatest, latest products and sometimes some silly ones, and we give them to our staff and let them use them in real-world circumstances to give you a great idea of what it would be like to actually own these, and then we tell you whether you should buy or not buy them. We're going to kick things off with the brand-new Surface Pro 3. Microsoft announced it last week. Paul Thurrott was at the event. He's, of course, the host of Windows Weekly. Took his Surface Pro 3 home, and he's been using it for the last week, and he's got a review. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Thanks for doing this a little bit extra this week.
No problem.
You and Mary Jo both got Surface Pro 3s. Have you been using it like as your main computer for the last week?
Yeah, every day. I really, really enjoy this device.
Now, we should say you've used every Surface. This is the third, obviously, in 18 months. You've liked all of them. Is this the best Surface yet?
Yeah, I mean, these devices have always come with some kind of a compromise. You know, the Surface RT, Surface 2 run Windows RT, which I don't like. Surface Pro devices run Windows 8, which I do like. But they were small for a laptop. You know, the screens were small. They were kind of thick and heavy, and they didn't get great battery life. And this device pretty much addresses all of those complaints.
People are raving about the thinness of the Surface Pro 3.
Yeah, I mean, last year when they launched Surface 2, I thought, how awesome would it be to have a Pro device that was that thin, and it just seemed inconceivable. But here we are less than a year later, and we already have it.
And this isn't a compromised device in the terms of the processor. This is kind of a standard right. PC specs, right?
Yeah, the review unit is an i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 gig SSD, but you can get it up to an i7. And if you don't have as much to spend, you can get it with an i3.
How's the screen on it?
The screen is beautiful. So it's 2160 by 1440, which is kind of a strange resolution, but it's a 3:2 aspect ratio. So it's a little bit more like a piece of paper than your typical, you know, 16:9 screen, which looks really stretched out when you put it in portrait mode. So
I can't think of another Windows laptop with a 3:2 screen. This is an unusual aspect
There's
ratio.
Nothing like it. I mean, you know, the iPad Air, iPad Mini have, a 4:3 screen, if I'm not mistaken, which is close.
The only 3:2 device I know of is Google's Chromebook Pixel.
The Pixel,
They're
yeah.
A very expensive touchscreen Pixel. And at first it felt a little weird, but it's a natural aspect ratio for paper, for working with documents, things like that.
It makes me wonder why the PC world has gone to 16:9, because 16:9 is great for movies, but how much time do we really spend watching movies on these devices?
Right. So very high-res screen. Is it 10-point multi-touch?
Yeah, 10-point multi-touch. It's got an electromagnetic pen, which is awesome. I don't personally use that kind of thing a lot, but it's got one-click access to OneNote. It's super sensitive, 256 levels of pressure sensitivity. It's beautiful. The whole thing is a beautiful-looking device. It's fast. It's great. I mean, it's not necessarily the first choice for a tablet. If you just wanted a tablet, I maybe look elsewhere. But if you want a device that kind of does it all and is maybe first and foremost a great Ultrabook, I don't think there's anything like it.
That's what seemed interesting about this, that Microsoft's positioning it more as a laptop than as a tablet. It's kind of a laptop that can be a tablet if you really need it to be.
Yeah, I mean, the Pro line has always been positioned against Ultrabooks, and the RT/2 line has been pushed to tablets. But, you know, this kind of follows that idea. It's definitely an Ultrabook first and then a tablet second. But, you know, most of us need both of those devices. And for some people, especially people that travel a lot and really want to lighten the bag, this is a great idea.
At the launch,
I feel like I should be showing it.
Yeah, show it. Yeah, let's see it.
This is it in portrait mode. You can see it's not...
It's normal looking.
...reflective there, but it's not super stretched out, you know?
It feels good. That's one advantage of 3.2 in portrait. It makes sense. Yeah. And the pen, how many buttons? Is it just a one-button pen?
So it's actually three buttons. There's a button on the top, and let's see if it works here. If you press it, it should go right into OneNote, and it does.
That's cool.
To a new note. And that's neat because it works above the lock screen, too. So if the machine is asleep and you walk into a meeting and you want to just start taking notes, you hit the button, and you're in note-taking mode immediately. And I really like that. But there are two additional buttons in the barrel of the pen. And one of them is for selection instead of writing. So if you want to grab things with the pen. And the other one is for erase. Instead of having the eraser be on the top, you can hold down a button and erase with the tip of the pen.
The guy who does the Penny Arcade cartoon said it's the best machine he's ever had for drawing his cartoons.
Yeah.
So that means this. I'm sorry. I'm going to call it a stylus. Microsoft wants to call it a pen, right?
It's a subtle distinction. I don't think we need to worry about the semantics of it. You know, there was some concern because the Surface Pro 2 and the original Pro had a Wacom stylus or pen, and that had 1,024 pressure-sensitive levels. But this one has less. But as Microsoft is telling us, and I'm not an artist, but I just in playing with
myself,
drawing and so forth.
Wait a minute.
Well,
you studied graphic design. You are an artist.
I am no longer an artist. I have, in fact, sold a painting professionally, but let's move on to that. So the point is, I honestly, in my experience, this works perfectly well.
I think
this looks great. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the difference between 256 and 1024 is. I don't know how you could tell the difference, frankly.
I don't think most people could.
No. Yeah. Battery life.
So I'm testing that. Microsoft claims up to 9 hours of web browsing battery life. I'm getting about 7 for streaming video. Actually, it's just video playback. It's not streaming.
Uh-huh.
That's better than Surface Pro 2, but not as good as what they're claiming. I'm going to take it on a road trip this coming weekend and give it some more real-world time. But right now in the office, I've been just blasting movies through it every day and seeing how long it lasts.
That seems pretty good,
7 hours.
Frankly.
That
seems pretty good.
It's not good.
So 12-inch high-def screen, the thinnest Surface to date,
mm-hmm.
Windows 8.1. Let's talk about the keyboard real quickly. It still has that type keyboard, which you snap on.
And it's a little different this time around. Obviously, it's bigger to match the device. But there's a second magnetic connection that can occur. And what that does is allow the keyboard to attach more securely to the device, and also put the typing, or the keyboard part of it at an angle.
It does this little wedge up thing.
Yeah, and it looks hokey. When I first saw that, I thought, oh, this is not going to work. You know, this magnetic type thing. I'll be pounding
weird
on the keyboard.
Yeah.
But honestly, the typing position is good, and the stability is excellent. I've been very surprised by that.
Panos Panay said it has lapability.
Lapability. Not my lap, but that's what we're told. Yeah.
All right. Well, traditionally on this show, we'll do pros and cons. On the pro side.
Well, pro side, it's a full PC, so you get the full Windows experience, and you get all the versatility of Windows in one box. And that means pen, multi-touch, keyboard, trackpad with gestures and a trackpad, too, by the way. Trackpad is hugely improved in this release, and mouse, obviously, if you want that. The screen, I think, is the single greatest thing, and the whole form factor is just amazing. 3x2, super thin, really portable, good battery life, it seems. I'll keep testing that one.
How's it sound?
Much less
How's
of a
audio?
Compromise than before. Actually, the audio is fantastic. So the speakers, Microsoft says the speakers are 45% louder, and I have to say, I only looked that up because I noticed how good the speakers were. I had music playing in my office. I thought, that sounds like it's coming out of a speaker system. It's really nice. I've actually been kind of surprised by that.
Good. Are there any cons?
Yeah. I mean, on the con side, it's still a PC. You know, so you get that kind of baloney. It's complicated. I've had issues with this device, and I think other reviewers have, with power management. Microsoft says there's a fix coming there. It's a little big and a little unwieldy to use as a tablet. So if your primary directive here is to get a tablet, I don't think Surface Pro 3 is necessarily the best choice.
It's a laptop. It's really a laptop.
It's a laptop first. I mean, it can do both, but it really is that kind of ultrabook first.
And the pricing has to be a little bit of a con. In fact, it's interesting. Microsoft at the announcement directly compared it. They said it's dollar for dollar the same as a MacBook Pro, which is considered to be very expensive.
That's like saying that my Chevette is pound for pound as safe as a Volvo.
Exactly.
They're kind of expensive. So I think the i3 version, I believe, is $799.
That's the low
end. That's before the keyboard.
Right.
You know, you get a factor in the $130 for the keyboard. So you're really talking $930, which is, you know, upper end of the PC price scale. It goes all the way up to, I want to say, $1,900.
It's almost $2,000.
$50, But by the way, before the keyboard.
Right.
So it's really just under $2,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty serious machine right there, though. But it is. They're hitting the premium end of the scale. Yeah.
Buy, try, don't buy.
If you're in the market for a PC and you want a little more than your average Ultrabook, absolutely buy.
Yeah.
This thing is really, really impressive. This is the Surface Pro I wish Microsoft had built 2 years ago.
There you go. That's the tagline, the Surface Pro I wish they'd built 2 years ago. By the way, one last note before we let you go. I noticed they're still advertising the Surface Pro 2.
I saw that too. I pointed it out to my wife. We like everyone else, we skip through the commercials when we can. Right. It was the football player, and I stopped, and I went back, and I said, isn't that Surface 2? And, yeah, they are. So I can't excuse it or explain it, but I would just point out that this device doesn't technically go or become available to buy until June 20th, and so, obviously, they want to get rid of the existing inventory.
Will they sell both at any point?
Just until it's sold out. Surface Pro 2 is going away.
This is the replacement for the Pro 2?
Yep.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear. I wasn't sure if there were two different lines or this is... So this is the replacement. Paul Theroux hosts Windows Weekly. He'll be back tomorrow, in fact, every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time with Mary Jo Foley. He writes probably the definitive Windows blog, the supersite for Windows, at winsupersite.com, and has many books to his credit, including the latest, the Windows 8.1 book, which is at windows81book.com.
That's right.
All right. Hey, thanks, Paul. I really appreciate you doing that review of the Surface Pro 3. It's a buy, kids. Take care, Paul. We're bringing in the experts for this show because, of course, there's nobody more expert on reviewing PCs than Paul. Nobody better to review an Android device than the host of All About Android, Jason Howell.
Well, thank you.
Is here. Good to have you.
It's good to be
and,
back.
And the Motorola G. This is the one Republic Wireless is selling for, what, $129?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty inexpensive. They have it, I believe.
They have the Moto X.
The Moto E is the super low price.
Okay, this is not.
$129.
So how much is this?
This one is $179 3G.
Okay. That's unsubsidized.
Unsubsidized.
So that's a very low price phone.
And it's been around for a little while now. It's been around probably for, I'd say, about 5 months. But it's become relevant again because when it initially released, it was only 3G. And it was priced at $179, still priced there. But they now have an LTE version for $229, all in. If the speeds are really important to you, you can get it for $229. That's now, no subsidy.
Let's set the groundwork here. Do you like the Moto X?
I do. My wife has the Moto X, and I think it's a fantastic, easy-to-like device.
Right. Absolutely. How does this differ?
It's a little bit... It's peeled back, and you have to imagine they had to cut some corners in order to get the price down further than the Moto X. It's a 1.2 gigahertz quad-core Snapdragon 400. Okay. It actually lacks the X8 chip, which is kind of the chip that had a lot of dedicated processing for different things.
That's important. That's the always-on chip that's listening.
Yep. So as a result, you lose a few extra things like active notifications, which is pretty great. Google Now voice commands, completely hands-free. You don't really have that here. The flick of the wrist to launch the camera. Some things like that just aren't on the Moto.
So this is really making it just pretty much a plain Android phone. In fact, they sell a Google Play edition. Is that what we're looking at now?
This is just the straight up Moto G 3G version. It's not the LTE version.
Although the Moto X was pretty much like a Google Play phone.
And this is too. I'm not aware of a Google Play version of the Moto G.
I
certainly haven't used it. All things considered, the design takes a lot of the cues from the Moto X. Mm-hmm. It has the same style of backplate, and actually through Moto Maker, you can customize and get different backplates. Yeah. So you still have that. I think the lowest cost one that was just recently announced, the Moto E, I'm not sure that you can necessarily do that. It's pretty great in that regard. 1 gig of RAM, so it's cut down a little bit there. It's a 4.5-inch HD display at 329 pixels per inch.
Smaller display, same resolution, but a smaller
display.
Right,
and I got to say, the display is one of the shining points here. I think the trick when you're peeling back from something like the Moto X to the Moto G and trying to save cost is you want to cut cost in ways that aren't noticeable or are still, you know, passable.
Right.
And I think they definitely did that. It's just super sharp, vivid screen. It was a perfect compromise to get the price down as far as that's concerned. Yeah. You don't really notice it. Design is definitely a little bit thicker than the Moto X, I'd say, a little bit heavier. But overall, it still has that really nice kind of curved appeal to it. It feels really good when you're making a call with it and you have it in your hand. It doesn't feel like it's going to slip out very easily and all that kind of stuff. Definitely one of the downsides is the camera. It has, you know, a lot of the software functionality. You can do slow motion.
That looks just like
mode.
The Moto X.
Yeah, it's got the same kind of UI.
But, you know, the camera on the Moto X wasn't very good. I wouldn't expect this to be better.
No, it's definitely not. And actually, yeah. Brian, if you want to take a look at some of the images came out okay in good light. You know,
that's
it was
not
a
bad.
Mixture of good. That was decent light.
Yeah.
And then the next one. You know, same thing.
It's hard
got
to keep,
a lot of smudging.
Keep up with moving kids.
particularly graininess. This is a video. I don't know if it's going to play. Maybe it won't play for you. But shot with the rear facing camera, and there we go. Just kind of choppy.
Low frame
smeary.
Rate. It looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't that great at shooting video in the times that I tested it out. It has an HDR mode, which I know I took a picture here in the studio with HDR, and it really improved things.
We love watching your kids. I got to tell you, Savannah's just adorable. Just adorable.
This is outside. You know,
that looks good. This looks
light,
good. This
sharp.
Is HDR.
If you're
huh?
getting punched with just a ton of light, you're going to get reasonably good pictures out of it. Kind of blown out in the whites there.
Never very good at low light.
There's
I have
your
to say.
HDR shot, which right. definitely balances that out
Not
a
bad.
Little bit more, but maybe a little on the dark side. Liz was moving.
You
so
can't get a picture of Liz. It's
she was bouncing there.
Yeah.
So there you go. So I don't know. You know, I think ultimately with the camera, it's another place that they probably peeled back a little bit to
sure.
get the price down, and you definitely notice it. So if pictures are essential, really important to you, something to consider there.
Now, the Moto X didn't have a removable battery or SD card. This doesn't either.
No, it doesn't, and that's actually another downside. 8 gigs of storage on this.
Oof.
When you're talking about no micro SD card slot, 8 gigs of storage. You can get 16 gigs of storage, I think, for $20 more.
Okay.
Probably should do that. But, you know, that runs out fast. After kind of all the stock stuff on here, you're left with 5 gigs left over, and that fills up fast if you're a gamer. It
right.
performs well with gaming, but like Dead Trigger 2, you know, it took up 500 megs just on the download alone. So you got to keep that in mind.
But we have to remember this isn't aimed at, this is
right.
not supposed to be a high spec phone for the high end of the market.
No, but
this
I mean,
is a low
it's reasonably
cost phone.
Spec considering
yeah.
that, you know.
How about dual SIMs? I think, is that a dual SIM phone? I think it is. I'm trying to remember. That'll always, if they're dual SIM, it tells you it's not for the U.S. market particularly.
Right, no. And it definitely
market.
Stretches outside
yeah.
just the U.S.
Yeah.
market for sure,
yeah.
as far as that's concerned. And then, of course, you know, same with the Moto X. The software is pretty much stock Android.
Yeah.
A few enhancements. There's a couple of extra apps in here. I already discussed the enhancements in the camera.
It has Assist. That's great.
It has Assist.
I love
which
Assist.
Is great. Sleeping mode, meeting mode, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
It knows when you're driving.
Now, that's different. It doesn't have the driving mode in here that
that's
I can
another
that
missing
I can
feature.
Yes.
Yeah.
Easy migration with Motorola Migrate. There's a Motorola FM radio that uses your headphones
yeah,
as an antenna.
That's the international market again, I think.
So
yeah.
that's kind of nifty.
Yeah.
I couldn't get much reception out of it, to be honest,
yeah.
but still kind of cool. And then, like I said, it's missing some of those other features like active notifications.
Pros and cons.
Pros, definitely the price. When you're talking about unsubsidized, $179 for really pretty reasonable hardware here. You can't beat it. The display, like I said, love the display. The design, I like it. I noticed some people that thought maybe it was a little pudgy, but I honestly don't feel that way. I think in the hand, it actually it's a pretty comfortable phone to use. And then the software. I'm a sucker for, you know, the kind of less enhanced software overlays,
right?
Which is what you get here.
A cleaner Google
yeah,
experience.
Yeah, a cleaner experience,
yeah.
exactly. And then the cons, the camera, and then the storage, which I've
right.
kind of already talked about. But all in all, I think if you got $180 to spend or you...
For a kid?
For yes, absolutely.
Great
or
choice.
If you want the LTE version, $229 is not too much to spend
yeah.
For these specs. I'd say bye.
A bye from All About Android host Jason Howell. He'll be up a little bit, in fact, less than an hour. That's to right. do all about Android.
And we'll, we have Miriam Jouar, actually, Tank
Love
Girl.
Miriam.
She was at a satellite event for the LG G3, so she's going to be talking all about the device that she played with.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coming up, we're going to take a look at some wireless speakers, but before we do, how about a pot that charges your phone? Let's take a look.
I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the Digital Jesuit, and I'm taking a look at some geeky camping gear from Power Practical. Meet the PowerPod 5, and you'll never guess what this nuclear bomb-looking device does. Actually, you probably will, because it does what it's named after. It's a pot for cooking that provides power. But how it provides that power is what's so geek-tastic. The PowerPod looks like a standard, well-made 1.4-liter camping pot. It uses a two-piece design with the lid doubling as a bowl to scoop in whatever you might be cooking. Heat-resistant wire handles fold flat against both the pot and the bowl, flipping out to give you hot carry capabilities. In use, the PowerPod is actually a damn good camping pot. The small size and 18-ounce weight is perfect for a pack, and it's durable. Very durable. In fact, with somewhat careful usage and storage for 3 months, I barely put any scratches into the hard anodized aluminum surface. What makes the PowerPod not just another well-made camping utensil is the thermoelectric generator and heat spreader built into the base of the pot. A thermoelectric generator, or TEG, is a device that converts heat energy into electrical energy. Not too long ago, I reviewed another thermoelectric generator, the BioLite Camp Stove, and it was brilliant because it allowed campers and outdoors folks to efficiently burn just about any slightly flammable material while converting some of that heat into electrical energy that both charged an internal battery and powered whatever USB device you might connect to the stove. The PowerPod works much the same way as the BioLite stove, converting heat into electricity. But while the BioLite stove had a blower, a combustion chamber, batteries, and support members, the PowerPod is a solid-state device with no moving parts. All TEGs work the same in that there's a hot side and a cold side. When heat moves from the hot side to the cold side, you generate electricity. Now, the trick is to keep the cold side cold. You need some sort of process to maintain that cold state, which means you need to draw the thermal energy away. If you don't, the two surfaces become the same temperature, and then... Actually, it just stops generating electricity. But if you let that heat continue, eventually, you'll destroy the generator. The BioLite stove uses its electric fan to make sure that the cold side stays the requisite number of degrees below the hot side. But without any moving parts, the trick to the PowerPod is that it uses whatever you're cooking as coolant. Okay, that's enough of the theory. I'm sure there are people out there asking, that sounds all good, but how well does it charge? Well, the answer in six words is, it depends on what you eat. At full tilt, the PowerPod can supply between 0.5 and 1 amp of 5-volt USB power, enough to charge my Galaxy S4 with about 4 hours of decent fire. However, since your food is the coolant, and since the amount of power that the PowerPod puts out depends on how much thermal energy transfers from the hot side to the cold side, the amount of power that the PowerPod can provide depends on what it's heating. The PowerPod is designed for straight water. Boiling water is perfect for generating power because the steam carries away much of the heat, always keeping the cool side cool, letting you charge faster and longer. In fact, you must boil water to make the power pot charge properly. When I tried cooking kare-kare, one of my favorite Filipino dishes, I realized that I was about to destroy my power pot because the high heat retention of the dish eventually made the temperature differential between the hot and cool side too small to generate power. Also... But seriously, without water, you'll destroy your PowerPod. The PowerPod 5 is available now. You can find it online for about $150. Let's start with the pros. And the first pro has to be the durability. This black anodized surface is really good at warding off bumps and scratches. In fact, this is perfect for a pack, for something that needs to be ready to go, something that needs to be ready to be used in the outdoors. In the months of usage, I see a little bit of wear, but most of the major dents have been avoided because of the construction of the device. The other thing, and let's be honest about this, is that it's just cool. It's cool to be able to generate power out of fire. I mean, we all like to have a device that in case of emergency or just in case of camping, we can charge the devices that we want to keep charged with just a little bit of elemental fire. on the con side, I'd have to say the first thing is price. $150 actually is a lot, even for a well-made camping pot. The other thing is that, in order for this to work properly, you have to be boiling water. Now, I have used it as a double boiler so that I can boil something else. Or I've gotten into the habit of boiling water and then pouring the water into the bowl. But the other thing is that you need to keep some water at the bottom. Otherwise, you will destroy the thermoelectric generator. It's just a bit fragile at times, and I worry about that. Still, considering all those pros and all those cons, if I had to give the power pot from Power Practical a buy, try, or don't buy, the geek inside of me says it's an absolute buy. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire with Before You Buy.
So, thumbs up for the charging pot from the... Am I wrong, or did Father Robert Ballasaire already review a pot that charges... I believe this is his second, and you did it for the Gizwiz.
No, Dickie D did it for the Gizwiz.
I think we've given you sufficient coverage. We are the charging pot station.
Enough camping material that charges your devices.
Now, everybody, this is OMG Chad Johnson, host of OMG Craft, our cheese craft show. He makes handmade
cardboard
cheeses.
And. Yarn,
he
not
also
excluded.
Is the host of the newest show on the Twit Network, Read It Up.
Mm-hmm. So new it doesn't exist.
So it's so new it hasn't happened yet, but it will any minute now. No, we've done 6 betas now.
Right.
And it's a great show for people interested in Read It. What is this here? This is a speaker lineup.
We have a plethora of speakers. I feel like the used car salesman of speakers. We got speakers in wood. We got speakers in plastic. We got speakers in wool.
These two, the first two look normal. This one looks a little like a Tuffet.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to all 3 of these speakers. Shall we start with the Ren?
Yeah. So let's go down.
Beautiful cherry wood or
before
mahogany?
Before we get to each individually, there's some general things I want to say. These are all wireless speakers.
Okay.
For pros, for all of them, they all have auxiliary inputs. And for the cons on all of them, none of them have pause, play, next buttons on them. Except for this one, which does have a single button right here, which you can click to pause and play. But there's no actual multimedia.
These are
buttons.
Speakers designed to be controlled by your phone or your tablet.
By your phone or tablet, absolutely. Right. So, with the Ren, this is only Bluetooth. Here's how this lineup works. We got Bluetooth only.
Bluetooth only.
Bluetooth AirPlay.
Bluetooth plus AirPlay.
AirPlay only.
AirPlay only, all right.
So, with the Bluetooth only, it'll work with your iOS devices, Android devices.
Tablets.
Anything
with Bluetooth.
Absolutely.
Bluetooth, I presume. Yeah.
That's the rosewood finish. It also comes in bamboo.
More than a finish. It really feels like solid wood. It's very nice.
They say that it's a veneer, but that is like the best veneer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because it actually has, I can see in our studio lights, it has dimples where it feels like there's real wood grain there.
It's not only pretty, it looks like a nice speaker.
Absolutely. This was my favorite in terms of design.
Yeah.
Sound? So let's go ahead and play that. So I have my iPad here, and I'm just going to use Google Play Music.
So you've paired all of these to your iPad.
I have. So each one of them is going to work differently.
Anything that this will work with anything, right? Because you just need Bluetooth.
Right. Because you just need Bluetooth. Right now it's already paired. And so I'll just play some of this Caravan Panic, which is a band.
Wow. That is some bass. I think that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, with this one, there's. It is good to note that there's 2 different audio. There's the audio the iPad is sending via Bluetooth, and this also has an amp sort of built in, so you can control the volume kind of twice, which was a little confusing.
There is a volume control.
There's
on the
volume
side
control
here.
On the side. There's also a source selector on the side. And,
I'm looking for something that Henry could use. He could play from his iPhone in his college dorm room. Mm-hmm. I sent him a Sonos, and it was no good because he can't pair. He can't access the Wi-Fi.
Right.
This you could use with Bluetooth. Plus, he could also plug something in, which is really important. Can you do stereo pairing with this, or is it only one?
It's just one. Okay. It doesn't have that sort of software. Okay. Now, the range on this is about 30 feet with Bluetooth. I was super surprised at how good the quality was. So, pros, high quality Bluetooth audio, and just absolutely wonderful design and construction. On the cons, no AirPlay if that's the thing that you need or if for some reason...
It's not a con. It's a limitation.
It's a limitation. And that's true.
But let me hear the price because that might be a con.
Price
this looks expensive.
$399.
Yeah, okay.
That is something
$400
that all of these are in that price range. This is the upper class Bluetooth.
All right. $400. Good sound, though.
Great sound.
Okay.
So, buy, try, don't buy. I'm going to give that one
a buy. I really enjoyed that stereo.
Now, this one's a little more portable. In fact, it even has a handle on it. It's pretty heavy, though.
This is from Cambridge Audio. Cambridge Audio is a pretty big name.
They're owned by Logitech, but they were a standalone for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It's slightly more portable because it does have a handle. It also has a lot. This is the most feature rich out of.
Look at all the buttons on the top.
The buttons on the top. That's, you know, start, stop,
presets which, too.
Yeah, and all of these on the side. You know, you have your normal power, volume, up and down.
Right.
And these, there's buttons 1 through 5, which can be kind of confusing if you're expecting.
That's presets, though, right?
Right. So yeah. Those are presets
to
for,
what?
For internet radio stations.
Okay.
So if we hit one.
But that's using their app. You have to use their app.
You have to use their app to make sure. To pair. And now it comes with some pre-installed. But this is a British company. So it was BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Three.
BBC One through Five. That's good.
Right. So if we hit two right now, we'll be listening to BBC Two.
And it turns it right on.
It should just jump over there.
Look at all the connectors here, too. Ethernet. Why Ethernet?
Because it is an AirPlay as well. So it does Bluetooth and AirPlay. So to connect to your home internet system.
It has auxiliary in, which is great.
Right. And this is the only one that has this that connector. So
the
if you
RCA
have a home theater,
left and right.
The RCA.
It also says
right.
MP3 in. I don't think that.
That's your aux jack.
That's your aux jack.
That's just your aux
that's
jack.
That's just mislabeled.
And then it does connect using WPS, which is.
So it's Wi-Fi also.
Yes. And so right now this is connected via Wi-Fi. This is not.
Sounds good.
Right. So we're listening to BBC Two. I can easily.
But you can change those stations.
You can. And you can even listen to Twit if you want.
Yeah. That sounds good. Maybe not quite as good as the Wrens, but Cambridge Audio is a well-known name. In fact, I used to have Cambridge Audio speakers, loved them.
Right, right. And if we want to compare, we can with the same song. Now, the one thing, the big downside on this one is the app. The app is slow, buggy, kludgy.
It's specifically from them.
It's from them. This is their app.
But you
app.
Don't have to use it because you could use anything that would AirPlay.
Absolutely. But, like, right now, we're kind of in this weird loop because it's deciding to play internet radio. And if I want to take control of it.
Because you push these buttons.
Right, because I push those buttons and the app is too slow.
So you have to launch their app to start.
For me, yeah, exactly. So it did. It was able to decide this was the last command, so now it's going to take.
You know what's cool is just by changing the settings in your player, you've taken it away from the Wren speaker and you're playing it through this other speaker. So
right.
In effect,
most of the apps, YouTube, Pandora, they all, because of how I, you know, this is an iOS thing, it's pretty good on deciding which one to do or not.
So this is AirPlay or Bluetooth.
And that was playing via AirPlay right there.
Okay.
Okay, so pros is that it's both Bluetooth and AirPlay. It does have internet radio stations, which you could play on your own, but it's nice that it's all built in with presets if you have maybe a terrestrial station that you really, really like.
A little convenience. I mean, you could do the same with any of these just using your device.
Right.
Yeah.
It does come with a remote, which none of the other ones do. The remote basically has buttons just to start up your internet radio that you've already predefined.
The presets are on the remote. Okay.
Right, exactly. And then it has much more inputs than all the others with the RCA jacks on the back.
Yeah, wow, that was wild.
Ethernet.
Okay.
And then con, it is a little bit difficult to set up. You have to set up an ad hoc Wi-Fi network, go in there, go to an IP address, type in your real Wi-Fi stuff. That was a little bit confusing and difficult.
Oh, because the first time, but you don't only do that the first time.
You have to do that once.
Get it on your network.
But it's a portable system, so anytime you decide to take it from the office you have to do that over. And the app was a big con. It was just not so great.
How about sound?
I think this sounded the best out of all of them.
Okay.
This one got the loudest with the least amount of distortion being very, very loud. And I think that's because of their background.
Is it stereo or is it just a mono?
Yeah, it's stereo.
It's stereo. It's left and right.
Yeah,
okay.
Here I can play some more.
So that's
booming music.
Cambridge Audio, the Minx. You had the Wren and now you have the Minx.
Yep. And this comes in at, this is $100 more.
Ooh.
At $499.
Wow, that's expensive.
MSRP is $600 at $599.
Wow.
Yeah, but street price is you can find it for $499.
Also, I noticed it's a little slow.
That's AirPlay.
That's AirPlay.
Con of AirPlay. AirPlay is super slow, so I can hit pause over here, and it now just paused. AirPlay is a big downside, And with that said, we're moving on to our third one.
AirPlay Only.
Which is AirPlay Only.
And what is this called? This is an interesting design.
The Libratone.
Libratone.
It's very
cool looking.
It's really neat looking. And in fact, I thought that I would hate the design, but the moment I put it on the counter, either in the kitchen or next to my bed,
yeah.
I don't know why, but it just blended in. I just really, really ended up kind of liking this design, even though I thought I wasn't.
Can you remove the quilt? No.
It is a little bit unstable because it has just three feet.
It's just a little,
at the bottom. Yeah. So I did notice whenever a cat would bump up against it, I was a little bit weird.
And drunks are going to try to sit on it. I'm sorry, because it looks like a little tuffet.
It does. It is a little tuffet.
And that'll break it for sure.
So don't let
drunks in your house.
AirPlay Only, so we can listen to this with the same music that we did the other ones. And... you can kind of see just how slow AirPlay is. I hit play right now.
So that's just AirPlay the way it is.
And that's just AirPlay's problem.
Once it's playing, it's fine. This is the lead.
You can see the front of it. Boom.
Wow. This is loud.
So this one is one of the loudest ones, but it gets the most distorted at high volume.
It sounds good, though, at that volume.
It would fill up a room for a party.
This is a dance party.
Yeah.
And waiting to happen.
Yeah. So, some of the cool... Sorry, not to take you out of the music jig, but this will also hold on a wall. It comes with a attachment.
That's not bad either. I think it would look cool on your wall.
Yeah, so you screw this into your wall, just like that, and then...
Oh, so it easily goes on and comes off.
It easily comes on. This is what you would attach to your wall. It's
intended to be removable.
Yeah, and it would rest on the wall.
Let me remove the tuffet from my wall so we can go in the other room.
My musical tuffet. Absolutely.
I kind of like that. How much is this?
This one cost $399.
The least expensive of the
bunch. Expensive. And it was the easiest to set up.
Yeah, because it doesn't do anything. It's AirPlay only.
Yeah, and the nicest thing is you could just use a...
This will only work with iOS. This won't work with Android or anything
else.
It
will not work with Android. That's a huge con. Is that there's a USB plug on the back next to the aux plug.
What's that for?
You just plug in your Lightning cable and plug it into your iPad.
Yeah.
And it says, can we take the Wi-Fi information off your iPad? There's a small pop-up. You hit OK, and it's paired.
Much easier.
Super easy.
Very nice.
Really nice setup.
Okay.
So let's get to the pros and cons. For the pros, it does come in 8 different colors. So if you want a red one, a black one, a purple one, that's really nice.
What color is this?
This is like shell or slate.
Stone or
slate.
Slater.
Yeah, gray, basically. It is wall-mountable. None of the others were wall-mountable. And the setup was absolutely the easiest out of all of them. On the cons, it's AirPlay only, which means that it's iOS only. And you can't use it with a PC. You could use it with an AirPlay-compatible Macintosh.
So buy, try, don't buy?
This one, I'm going to... say don't buy.
Yeah.
The fact that it's AirPlay only limits me. This was the one that I had to remember to use, that I had to keep coming back to. Because
only buy it if you're really in the Apple ecosystem
really
and you want to hang something on the wall. And frankly, anybody who thinks this looks good probably is an Apple user because it's so modern.
Right. And this one also had the buttons on the front, which included volume up, down, and a play
and,
pause
and a chicken.
Button. And a little bird.
A little bird.
Is that funny? Because that one's the Wren, but this one has like a
The Libratone has a bird on it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just about it. Coming in at $399. Don't buy the...
Cambridge Audio
was a buy.
Okay.
And the Wren was also a buy.
Okay, so two buys, qualified
Maybe a try.
Don't buy.
I mean, this was... It's hard to recommend something.
You know if you want this.
Right. You know if you want it. It's hard for me to say to someone, buy this, if I don't know their setup, and also if I know that they're stuck to an ecosystem.
This is the hipster speaker.
I couldn't tell my grandma to buy this.
No. But if you're a hipster,
right.
You should buy that.
Right. Absolutely.
And that makes sense. There's a speaker for everyone. Chad Johnson, the host of OMG Craft and Reddit Op. Thank you.
Of course.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Good job. A little correction from a previous effort, last week's episode. Remember the barbecue dragon, the thing that I blew? Love that thing, but I misquoted the price. I think we got it right on the lower third, but I just want to make sure it's clear. I saw $25 on the website. That's two easy monthly payments of $25. So it was actually $50.
Darn.
And at that price, you know, a hairdryer would probably work just as well. So maybe it's a little overpriced, but I still miss it now. because it was,
you were saying that earlier,
becoming a good friend. Well, thank you all for coming in and doing the show. Thanks to all of our reviewers, Chad Johnson, Robert Ballasaire, Mr. Jason Howell, and of course, Paul Thurrott. We do Before You Buy right after Security Now every Tuesday. I hope you'll stop by and watch the show. We don't do it kind of all in order, but that's okay, because when you download it, you don't have to download it all in order. In fact, if you go to youtube.com/beforeyoubuy, you can get individual reviews of all the products in case you want to share them with an interested party. You can get the full show at twit.tv/BYB or wherever netcasts are stored. And don't forget, you were using it just earlier, our Twit apps. There's so many great apps on all the platforms, including Roku, iOS, and Android, Windows Phone 2. Those are a great way to listen to each and every show. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Remember, you got to watch before. That was good. Let's do it together. Ready?
Okay.
You got to watch before you buy.